It wasn't just Andrew Benintendi today. It was JD Martinez, who has gotten hot.
That ball is gone! What a bullet by Devers!
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Full week into June and still no baseball, but we roll on. It is the TC and Jerry podcast. Thank you for joining us for another edition. I'm Tom Carey. He's Jerry Remy, and still nothing to talk about, Jerry.
No, you know, I'm at the point right now, TC, where I am completely bored, you know, because every time that a proposal comes out, before I finish reading the story, it is already turned down by the other side. So, you know, I don't claim to be an expert in those matters. I was never a player rep. I was never, you know, anything to do with that. You know, I would just listen to what they say and go along with it. But I am to the point right now, and I'm so bored with it, that I'm just going to wait till something comes out where it says, okay, now this is something that they can maybe even take to the next day, you know, and discuss more. That hasn't even happened right now. So it's like I'm tired of reading about it. I'm tired of hearing about it. I want some action. And until that happens, I'm like checking out of this. I'm numb.
Yeah, I'm not going to let you wait, though. We got a half hour to fill here, so we're going to do it. It's a great point, though, and I actually went on Twitter and said somebody yesterday, shame on the owners for letting details be leaked out constantly. Shame on the players for screaming outrage before they've even seen the proposal.
Right.
There's not a lot of glory here on either side, okay? I'm a guy in the middle. I love baseball. I want baseball back. Get on a Zoom call. Hash it out. I've got the premium upgrade. It goes more than 40 minutes for a Zoom call. I'll give it to them for free so they can just get on a Zoom. But, I mean, because you can't get in a room right now. I get it. But it used to be done. Now, you didn't have Twitter in the day. Times have changed. I get
right.
it.
Right.
But, my goodness, at least let's get in a room virtually or otherwise and start throwing ideas out there rather than you say, here's what we're doing, and John Heyman and Ken Rosenthal and everybody has the details, and the players are slamming Twitter as quick as they can saying this is an outrage, and there hasn't even been a proposal yet.
No, you're exactly right. And like, you know, I remember going through these days. I really do, and I know how this stuff works. And, it generally trickles down from a meeting that has maybe four or five representatives in it who report to the team reps, and then out to the players. We're not even getting this out to the players yet, where it's being zapped down before you know anything happens. And you know, I'm caught in the middle of this a little bit because I'm receiving a pension from Major League Baseball as part of the union, right? And now I work for owners. I work for ownership, basically. You know, with 80% of it owns Desson, right? So I'm caught in the middle of this a little bit, but it's not the point. I don't understand most of it. You know, when they start talking about, well, this all adds up to the same 33% that they've been talking about with three different deals. I'm totally lost. I didn't get that far in school. I got to 12th grade, and then I went on to play baseball. So I'm a little bit lost with all of this, and I'm very bored with all of this, and I just want to hear somebody come on and say, well, look, here's something that maybe we can work with. Let's have a discussion. I agree with you. Let's get on the phone and let's get in a room and let's beat it out till we get it done and then get something going and make the sport look good. Because right now, this sport, in my opinion, looks absolutely horrible compared to what everybody else is doing.
Well, there's no doubt about that. They've missed the chance to grab this thing the leader. Baseball could have been the first sport back. 4th of July could have been opening day, would have been the greatest American moment of the pandemic. They could have been the only game in town for the entire month of July.
Right.
Instead, they're squabbling, and it's a horrible look. Hardcore baseball fans are fed up with it, and all those casual fans that you keep worrying about losing every year are already throwing their hands up in disgust.
They are, and, you know, what's going to happen is, I think, if a miracle happens and we do come back, you know, sometime in early July, well, the excitement's only going to be there for a couple of weeks because then you're going to be turning into the NHL playoffs, the NBA playoffs, football's around the corner. You know, I mean, everything is going the wrong way. So the attention span's not going to be there for very long. And I wonder, you know, how it's going to look without fans in the stands, how people are going to react to that. It's going to be totally different. So I am really, I've had it up to here with this. I can't take picking, you know, every time, like, somebody will text me and say, did you hear the latest proposal? And I'll go, and by the time I've done, you know, I get done reading it, it's already been rejected. And I go, why am I going to bother reading this? You know, it's just crazy. I mean, it's just, I mean, I could never do this because I don't have the personality for it. I'd have to say, TC, look, you and I, we're going to lock ourselves in a room at Nexen, and we're coming out, and we're going to agree on something. Okay, we're not going to let this roll any further. That's how I operate. That's how you operate. You know, we're going to sit in here till we have to, and we're going to make something work for both sides that everybody can be happy with this, and we can play baseball with what people want to see right now. But in another month, are they going to want to see it this as much? I'm not so sure.
Well, they're not going to want to see it if the players are like being dragged into it, right? If you have a 50-game season and the players are angry, they don't even want to be doing it. Right. Then you got an even bigger problem. I'll tell you, one concern I have, I don't know if you've seen this, people have talked about the idea that basketball might decide to become a summer sport. Like, if this goes well, and it probably will, they could get away from football, right? Football crushes them for most of the season.
Right.
All the way, start around Christmas. Christmas has always been an NBA day. You could start the season in December, have your playoffs in September on the other end, and you could jump right in and fill the void if baseball's not playing and baseball's making it easy for them. Baseball's giving up summer if they can't get this done.
Well, I agree with you. And I also think that baseball right now, and, you know, we've had a lot of time to think about this. I think baseball has to come into this century. It really does. And I think there are changes that have to be made in the game to make it more appealing for the fans. Now, I get all the nostalgia with it. I get those of the traditionalists. I get all that. But we're in a different generation right now. We are. I had my grandson over here, you know, just a couple of days ago. We were celebrating his graduation in the garage.
Congrats to him. Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, in the garage, we're celebrating it, right? And we were talking a lot about this particular subject. And he was bringing up points that I had never even thought about, you know. And I said, you know, he said, you know, he basically was saying baseball is just too slow for me to watch. He says, I'll check in. I'll come back. But I'm not going to sit there for 4 hours and watch baseball. And I think they've got major changes to make, which have to come up in the CBA to bring this back, you know, exciting stuff to the fans. I understand the leisurely afternoon at the ballpark, how wonderful it is. The sun's out, you're drinking beers, you're having hot dogs. It's wonderful. But when you start talking about 4-hour games, 3.5-hour games, when 3-hour games are long, short games, you've got a problem with the sport. So there are rules they've got to implement, you know, to get this thing back on moving a little bit, because the younger generation, they don't have time for this. They don't have time. They don't have 20 seconds. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's made me think of a lot of different things while I've been sitting here doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah, the TikTok generation does not lend itself to baseball easily. And you're right, because those problems haven't gone away. You know, that those right. problems are no. still there. We're not even talking about them right now, because we're just trying to get them on the field for the rest of this year.
We're just trying to see the problem right now.
Right. We just want to see the problems again because we have time. We'll go for 4 hours. But next year we'll be back to our lives. And they're going to have to deal with it. You're right about that. My other worry is, and maybe you can speak to this, you were a player for a long time, a hard-nosed, hard-driving guy who overcame a lot of odds to become a major leaguer. You know the mentality of a Major League Baseball player. My worry is, wherever it goes in these coming days and weeks, the players are pissed. The players are angry.
Yeah.
And when you get players angry, they are, by definition, they've developed a me against the world mentality, right? Now they want to win. It's not enough. They want to win. They don't just want to negotiate. And I think that's where the players are right now. And I think it's going to be really hard to get them to walk back from where they're so angry at the institution that they want to win no matter what.
Well, the history of the union will tell you that. I mean, you know, it really will. And you're exactly right. They're very competitive, as the owners are. Look, these owners have been very successful people in their lives. That's why they're billionaires. I mean, they don't just become billionaires. They work very hard to get that. So, you got two groups of very, you know, professional, very hard-nosed, very successful people who are going at each other right now. And I agree with you about being a player. I mean, if I came back, okay, I would be upset maybe, but the fact is once I get on the field, and then it's again about what I do. It's how I play, and that's going to determine how much money I make down the road. So you just can't come back and say, well, I'm pissed off, and we, you know, I don't want to do this, and you know, you got to go out there and perform. You really have to do, because it's all on your baseball card. I mean, all your numbers are on your baseball card. So, you know, you got to come back and you got to do the job that you're capable of doing. But you're right. It's two very competitive group of people going at each other, and nobody wants to give one inch in this. Nobody.
So players want the full prorated salary. We know where they're at. Owners say, listen, this is as much as we can afford to spend, right? They say we're going to lose money, so we got to find it. The hard part is what happens when they finally do get back on the field. Now, yesterday, doing my at-home segment, we had a pretty cool Brock Holt, Mitch Moreland, and Tim Wakefield all came on together, all captains of the Jimmy Fund. So we had a great talk about that. But I also asked Moreland and Holt what they say to fans who are sitting through this. And it's pretty interesting. Here's what they had to say.
Just hang tight and, you know, keep the excitement about it. And a lot said about a lot of different stuff right now. I wouldn't believe any of it. I would just get ready to go out and be a fan when we do start up. I promise you, we're as anxious as the fans are. So still trying to get our work in, getting prepared. Want to be out there, man. It feels weird not being out there. But, you know, the sooner we get out there, the better. I said it last time I think we talked. I mean, I can't wait to get back on the field for sure.
Brock, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, like Mitch said, hang tight. I feel like that's the, you know, that's the motto here, you know, during quarantine is like, I don't feel like anyone really knows anything about anything. You know, you hear one thing and then you hear something completely different. So, I'm choosing not to listen to anyone and I just do what they tell me. So, you know, that's it. Just hang tight. Baseball will be back eventually. And, you know, in my opinion, like, we all miss baseball. We all love baseball. But is baseball really that important right now? I don't know. But it'll be back, and it'll be back better than ever. And everyone's anxious to get back on the field and play, and fans are anxious to watch it. And it'll be back. It's just we don't know when, and we don't know for how long. And but everybody's ready, and we just got to wait till the right time.
All right, so it's interesting right there. Mitch Moreland saying, don't believe a lot of what you're hearing. And I think the interesting thing there is, as you know, Jerry, you're talking about the union as one entity, but there's a lot of players within that union, and they don't all agree, right? That's the hard part. They don't look at it the same way.
You're exactly right. You know, then I think these players, that every time they hear, I got a phone going off in here.
Now, you want to answer it? We could just have that person come on the show.
It could be Tony Clark calling. Who knows?
Yeah. He's heard enough.
My wife just got it out of here, so we don't have to hear that anymore. But now I lost my train of thought.
Well, about players, about the fact, like Mitch Moreland saying, don't believe everything you hear. In other words, some players probably want to grab whatever they can and get out there, right? It's not one voice. It's 750 voices.
Right. Well, that's how the union runs. It really does. You know, we talked about the breakdown and how you, and you've always got players that are saying, why are we doing this? You know, why is this going on? And it's basically for the big picture, obviously, working down the road. That's what it was for us. That's why they're in situations like they're in today, because of what we had to do years and years ago. So, you know, it becomes a very competitive thing. You don't generally have 100% backing, but you have enough players to convince the others that, look, this is the right way to go, and this is the way we have to go. Because if we give here, we got the CBA coming up, and we're going to have to give more. And they don't want to tolerate that. But they make a good point, you know. You can't really believe everything you read. You can't believe it. But it's hard to start reading something and have something rejected before you finish reading it. And it's that's the point. But I keep going back to that. I'm so frustrated by that. I was doing it the other day. I was reading the proposal from the owners. And before I got done, I got a text saying they shot it down. Yeah. Okay? So, I mean, what are you supposed to think? You know, what are you supposed to think? I just keep saying to myself, like we were talking about, get yourself locked in a room. Lock yourself in a room and beat yourself up until you can't go any further and get this thing back, because this is horrible, horrible for our game.
Yeah, Twitter was frustrating yesterday because no sooner had the report come out that the owners had made a new proposal, and you think that's great. Here we go. We got dialogue. By the time I'm done reading that story, I go back on Twitter, scrolling it down. Players are already saying this is an outrage. This is worse than the last one. So it's happened. When, and by the way, how about Brock Holt's mustache? You get a load of that?
Yeah, it's like Rolly Fingers, but a bad one.
Yeah, not quite. Yeah, it's a Rolly Fingers light. You know, it's funny. We joked about it, but he was a popular guy. You know, there's guys who play, you know, and he was a good player. Obviously, he was an all-star. He was their only all-star that year, whatever year that was, 2015, I guess. But there is a guy who resonates with local fans, Brock Holt, because of the way he works, says all the right things, never took himself too seriously, and then the work he did at the Jimmy Fund. What a great representative of the Red Sox he was.
Oh, absolutely. And I think when his career is done, he's going to be able to name a job in the Red Sox organization that he wants to do, just like Tim Wakefield, you know, right, did the same thing. And I think that's where Brock Holt's future lies. I mean, he's going to go on and continue to play somewhere else, but he's eventually going to be back in Boston doing something, because you're right. You know, he's the kind of guy, he's the working man player. He's the kind of guy that goes out there every day, and plays different positions, plays them as well as he can possibly play them, gives you 100% all the time. We keep hearing 100%, but, you know, he does. He gives you 100% all the time. He says the right things. He's very good in interviews. I mean, you know, this guy belongs in Boston. And I'm sure that one day he will be back in the Red Sox organization.
He texted me after we were done yesterday, and he was joking, but he said, you know, if this stoppage continues, I might need to provide for my family as Nesson hiring. And I said, well, yeah, we have no games, right? We have guys who do this who can't do it right now. But I said, you know, hey, keep playing, make your millions. You know, there's always stuff. I've yet to have a former player sitting with me in the green room say, you know, I should have retired a lot earlier and come into television. You know, they never say that. They always say, yeah, maybe I could have gotten another couple of years on the diamond first.
Take the millions. Take the millions, and then you got plenty of time to do whatever you want in Nesson.
You can do that forever. There's no doubt about that. All week, we've been showing the best of Pedro Martinez. And you and I have been talking each week about the old games we're showing. But this is a good one. When you start talking about Pedro, obviously – one of the greatest pitchers in the history of the game, not just saying the best pitcher I ever watched, but he is certainly the best pitcher I ever got to watch on a daily basis and be around. Right. And what, I mean, for a guy who was told early on in his career that he was too small and too frail to throw like that, boy, did he prove some people wrong.
Well, he did, and that was part of his motivation all the time. You know, Tommy Lasorda, Tommy Blue out there in Los Angeles kept telling him, no, he couldn't be a starting pitcher because he'd break down. Well, the fact is, he always carried that chip on his shoulder, and he always wanted to be a starting pitcher. And, man, did he prove to be one of the best of all time. And, you know, we talk about games and games that have been played. My favorite of all time was the game at Yankee Stadium where Chili Davis hit a home run off him early in the game. And I think in that game he struck out 17 Yankees.
17.
A real, real good Yankee team. Real good offensive club. That was the most impressive performance that I have ever seen a pitcher make. And I've seen no hitters. I've been behind no hitters. I've been on the other side of no hitters. That was by far the best pitching performance that I have ever seen in my life. Because, you know, he had everything. He was intimidating. He had that nasty changeup. He could throw 97 miles an hour. He had the breaking ball to go along with it. But the fact is, he was fearless on the mound. And he put intimidation into the opposition, which is so important, in my opinion, and it still should be important in today's game. But that's kind of left the game a little bit because, you know, guys don't throw at each other as much as they used to, because if they do, they get suspended for 4 or 5 games. But that was part of the intimidation of playing back in those days. And Pedro carried that along with him. You didn't want to face Pedro Martinez. You wanted to beat him. You wanted to try to hit him and beat him. But you couldn't. You couldn't do it. He was that good.
You know, I remember you guys would do it and the national networks would do it. They'd have him show you the grips. And he had those long fingers
that
allowed him to for the changeup, to take a little off it, to get a little extra maybe something on it. It really – I mean, he had everything. Don't get me wrong. But his ability to manipulate that baseball on release was something very few pitchers have ever had.
Well, you know, I did an interview with him, and he showed me his fingers. You know, they're about twice the size of mine, you know. And no wonder the changeup was so great, because by the time the drag continues on and finally stops, it's going to be a good changeup, right? And, you know, he was, you know, he's the kind of guy that could have walked up the home plate and said to you, I'm going to throw you a changeup for the next five pitches. Let's see how many you hit. And I guarantee you may not hit one of them. That's how good that changeup was. And there were plenty of guys that knew it was coming but had no chance on it. You had no chance because it would dip down, it would dip away, it would do all kind of different things. So the best that I have ever seen for a period of time was Pedro. You throw Clemens in that category as one of the greatest. I played with Nolan Ryan. He was probably the most intimidating guy that I ever saw pitch. And players, there were always changes in the lineup every time he pitched because of guys that didn't want to face him. Now, that's intimidation.
Was never afraid to hit a guy, and said once, I think in his career, he said two of them were by mistake. So, you know, after the career, he admitted when he wanted to send a message, he was never afraid to come in and send one in on you.
Well, are we talking about Nolan?
No, Pedro. You talk about guys commanding the inside, but he wasn't afraid to drill you, just like Nolan was. But in Nolan's era, guys did that. The time Pedro was pitching, not a lot of guys did that.
Pedro was definitely a throwback to our era, where guys got drilled all the time. And, you know, they got drilled for other reasons. If he didn't like a swing that you took against him, you know, if you swung too hard against him, he was going to knock you down, or he was going to come inside with it. It was so impressive to watch. I mean, for me as a broadcaster, and I couldn't wait for every one of his starts, because I've always felt, you know, like it was a heavyweight fight. It was some kind of championship thing going on here. The crowd, the buzz in the crowd was always different. You know, it was a totally different game, and I couldn't wait for every fifth day to do his games, because you never knew what you were gonna see. Now, you would think a guy like that, you know, he had a chance every time he took the mound and throw a no-hitter. Never really did. It's amazing. Just goes to show, you know, sometimes you got to be lucky to do so. But the fact is that you had that feeling every time he took the mound, you had a chance that day to see a no-hitter.
The other thing about Pedro, and we were both around him, you were around him longer than I was, but I got to be around him when I was sideline reporter the last couple of years, is he had that strange on-field, off-field, two different personalities, right? Most guys, Roger Clemens was intimidating, and if you were a reporter walking up for an interview, he was intimidating, and if you saw him on the street, he was intimidating. But Pedro, as intense and as intimidating as he was on the mound, was goofy and funny and relaxed in those 4 days in between starts.
He was great for the clubhouse. He really was. You know, I mean, he'd be a totally different guy. You know, when he walked in the day he pitched, I wouldn't even bother saying hello to him. I wouldn't even look at him, because I knew this was his day. But other than that, every other day was great. It was a ball of fun. You know, he'd always have something to say. He'd be getting on somebody. It was a little bit like Pedroia, not as loud as Pedroia, you know, but he would always be getting on somebody, or, you know, pushing somebody to do something. And a lot of times he'd be speaking Latin, Spanish, of course, and I wouldn't understand what he's saying, but everybody would be rolling, you know. I mean, he had guys just – it was a totally different guy, and how he could turn it on and off like that, I don't know. But because, like, Nolan couldn't turn it off any day. He couldn't turn it off. He was always like that. And Roger was like that. Roger was a great example of that. But Pedro was totally different. He loved talking to the media. He wanted to talk to the media.
Really intelligent guy, and not just about baseball. Like, people, I think, as when he was playing, I think they know it now. You see him on MLB Network, and you hear him talk. Right. You understand. But a really cerebral guy. Like, not just intelligent, but thoughtful. You had a conversation with him. He had something to say, and he would make a point with it.
Yeah, he grabs your attention. You know, every time that he speaks, you know that he's going to say something that you haven't heard him say before, or anybody else say before. And he's got a special gift. He really does, and he's always had it. It was total enjoyment to be – it was a privilege to cover him as an analyst.
And also really important in sort of changing the feel, the culture of Fenway. I often say, you know, listen, we know some of the racist history of the Red Sox going way back. Yeah. We know the history. John Henry's been very upfront about a shameful past that this ownership group has tried to change. But Pedro came in, and you started seeing Dominican flags flying. Yeah. You started hearing salsa and merengue music. Later, Manny Ramirez, David Ortiz came and became even more. But it started with Pedro. It started with his starts. Every fifth day, you know, that quiet Fenway Park vibe was gone. They were dancing. We were having fun. Yeah. And it was all because of Pedro.
It reminded me very, very much of the one year that I played winter ball down in Mexico. It was that kind of atmosphere for every single game. That's what they did. You know, they enjoyed their baseball. They used to bet on it like crazy down there. They bet on everything you did, you know, and it brought that atmosphere to Fenway Park. You could see it. It was totally different. That's where Buena Noches came from. I mean, you know, because we had, all of a sudden, we had so many Latin fans. And to this day, if I try to stop saying it, they get upset with me. And, you know, I don't stop. I just keep, sometimes I feel silly doing it, but the fact is these people want to hear it, you know, and I get, if I make a mistake and don't say it, I get the tweet stuck. Where's Buenos Noches? Where's Buenos Noches?
So, I want to hear it. It's become like, I don't feel a Red Sox game on TV can start now until you say it.
Sometimes I feel silly doing it, but it's become part of the culture, you know, at Fenway Park.
All right, so I do want to ask you before we go. Your grandson graduated from college. I saw the picture. You guys were in your garage. Difficult for any seniors right now. You missed that whole thing. A strange way to celebrate it, wasn't it?
It was very strange. You know, we had my daughter and her husband and my grandson over and my wife, of course. And we all sat in the garage and, you know, we had a couple of cocktails. We had a good time. But I felt bad for him. You know, I really did, because they're talking about the possibility of having it, you know, next October or September or October sometime. And that's not the same. You know, it's not the same. You know, kids will be working by then. It'll be totally different. But the thing that I'm most happy about is he lived with a great group of kids, you know, and he met some wonderful friends that he'll have for the rest of his life. And fortunately for him, a lot of them are within the New York, New Jersey, you know, Massachusetts area. So he'll be able to keep contact with those kids throughout his whole life, which I think is great. And, you know, it's a special, special time. And, you know, what a year to have to graduate in 2020. I mean, just horrible.
And I do feel bad for those guys. Like, we've heard a lot about the high school kids. You feel bad for them. But the college kids, I mean, it's A, you lost the last 3 months of your senior year, and B, now you got to go find a job in this crap. You know, in the middle of all this, you got to go to the real world. Good luck.
Yeah, and take care of your bills, too, you know. Right. So, I mean, it's a tough way to get started, but you know what? He's going to do just fine. He's a great kid.
Well, congratulations to him. And another half hour has flown by. Incredible. We always sit here before and say, what the hell are we going to talk about?
Yeah, maybe one day a game. Who knows?
Can you imagine? Maybe we'll have a baseball game. Jerry, great to see you. Good to catch up.
All right. Take care.
That's Jerry Remy. I'm Tom Caron. This was the TC and Jerry Podcast. Thanks for listening.